Now, okay, so if you don't know boxing, how about pugilism, which is the big word for boxing? No, that's fencing. That's an Olympic sport. I always thought that'd be so cool to learn how to do that. Then I could have dueled with Basil Rathbone. Basil Rathbone. Oh, you don't know Basil Rathbone? Oh man, the younger generation. Which is of course me. At least I'd like to think so. No, Basil Rathbone was a great movie star of the golden era, and he always got cast as the bad guy because he was an expert in fencing. And so on all the Errol Flynn movies, the what was that one with Olivia de Havilland, that he plays the bad guy, and No, that's close. We can delete this part of the message. Let's Robin Hood. Thank you. So that's fencing. Okay. Now we're gonna start for real. When someone prepares to fight, you know, there's a stance. I remember having karate class when I was young, and you have your stance and you're planted in such a way that you're firm, but yet you can move quick. You're planted solid, but you can move and gold and silver and some designer clothes that he found in Jericho. Usually, Israel would be allowed to take spoils of war. But that first time at Jericho, God said, no spoils. Everything's mine, because this is your first battle. And so they lost the first battle at Ai because of Achan's sin. They regrouped. They dealt with the sin in the camp, and then they moved on. And in Joshua chapter 7 and 8, there's a very detailed description of the defensive and decoy pattern that Joshua set up. They're fighting a battle. The text talks about swords. The text talks about the victories that Israel wins. But did you know in the first chapter of Joshua, at the very beginning, God said, I am going to fight your battles. And here at the end of the book of Joshua, we have another reference to God fighting the battles. Usually, this is the way we fight. Or we draw our sword, or we lift the rifle. These are the ways that we normally fight. This is the way we think of fighting. Do any of you think of fighting any other way? Well, by prayer. Well, blessed is the one who thinks ahead. Because you're getting into the spiritual dynamic, which is exactly where Joshua 23 takes us. Joshua chapter 23. We are in the final three chapters of the book of Joshua. I found it interesting this week, as I read through this chapter over and over and over, I saw the phrase, the Lord your God. And I started counting them. In this chapter of only 16 verses, it uses the phrase, the Lord your God, 14 or 15 times. And then I got even more curious. How many times does it speak of God in the final counted 40 times that the word Elohim is used in the final three chapters of Joshua? I got out my concordance and I compared that to the first 21 chapters. In the first 21 chapters of Joshua, it uses the word God only 30 some times. But then in the last three chapters, it uses the word God 40 times. The last three chapters of the book of Joshua, to me, are about our relationship with the Most High. So let me set it in context with the book of Joshua. At the beginning, God came to Joshua and said, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, Joshua, get up, take these people across the Jordan River, and take them into the inheritance that I have promised to give them." And along the way, there, at the beginning of the book, there were spiritual battles that had to, spiritual things that had to occur. The people were circumcised. Evidently, no one had been circumcised during the 40 years through the wilderness. They are circumcised, they observe Passover, and then they go to fight their first battle at Jericho. We have several chapters of battles, and then we have several chapters of that describe the parceling out of the land until chapter 21. And then tagged on to the end of Joshua are three chapters that again start dealing with issues of our allegiance and loyalty, issues of our love, issues of who will you serve. And in chapter 22, last week, we saw an issue of where the tribes, the two tribes on the east side of the Jordan River, were going to have built an altar. And the tribes on the west side of the Jordan River thought that they had built that altar in order to sacrifice there. Of course, God said, "I will appoint only one place for sacrifices." And so the western tribes were getting ready to go to war, not against the nations in the land, but against their own brothers. And Pinchas, Aaron's grandson, steps up and in a beautiful way negotiates between the two groups of people. Last week was about how do we worship? How do we maintain unity with each other? These are issues in our relationship with God. God is not interested merely in how we relate to Him. God is also interested in how we relate to each other. Chapter 23 continues these principles of how we relate to God. So, having introduced chapter 23, this is a speech by Moses. It says, "And it came to pass after many days, when the Lord had given rest to Israel from all their enemies round about, and Joshua was old and well advanced in years, that Joshua called for all Israel, for their elders, for their heads, for their judges, for their officers, and said to them, 'I am old.' He said, 'And you have seen all that the Lord your God has done to all these nations because of you. For the Lord your God, He is the one that has fought for you. Behold, I have given to you an inheritance according to your tribes, those nations that remain from the Jordan with all the nations that I have cut off, even to the Mediterranean. And the Lord your God, He will thrust them out before you and drive them out from your sight, and you will possess their land as the Lord your God spoke to you. Therefore," verse 6, "be very strong, be very courageous to keep and do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, that you turn not aside from that to the right or to the left, that you do not come among these nations, these that remain among you, neither make mention of the names of their gods, nor swear by them, nor serve them, nor worship them, but hold on to the Lord your God, as you have done unto this day, because the Lord your God has driven out from before you great nations. But as for you, no one has stood against you to this day. One of you has chased a thousand, for the Lord your God has fought for you as he said he would. Take good heed for yourselves that you love the Lord your God. Else, if you do otherwise and hold on to cleave to the remnant of these nations and make marriages with them and go into them and they to you, know that for certain the Lord your God will no more drive out these nations from out of your sight, but they will be a snare and a trap for you and a scourge in your side and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from the good land that the Lord your God has given you. And behold, this day I am going the way of all the earth. It's a good Hebrew way of saying, I'm getting ready to die. I'm going the way of all the earth. Consider therefore in your hearts and in your soul that not one thing has failed of all the good things which the Lord your God said concerning you. All have come to pass. Not one thing has failed. And it shall come to pass that as all the good things have come, of which the Lord your God has said, so shall the Lord bring upon you all the bad things until you have destroyed, and until he has destroyed you from this good land that he has given you. If you trespass the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and you go and serve other gods and worship them, then will the anger of the Lord be kindled against you, and you will perish quickly from the good land which he has given you. That's chapter 23 of Joshua. So Joshua comes to them, and he has this speech to, first of all, encourage them to see what God has done. Do you see how God has fought for you? Twice, we're told that God has fought for them. God is the one that fights the battles. Do you remember in the Exodus from Egypt story, Exodus chapter 14, the people are trapped. There is a big stone monument on one side of them. The Red Sea is on the other side of them. And then in the distance, they see the Egyptian army coming. Pharaoh has regretted the fact that he's let his free labor leave Egypt. And they are coming to attack. The people are afraid. But Moses says, stand. Stand and see the deliverance that God is going to bring you today. What God did is he brought the cloud of his presence around from in front of them to behind them, to between them and the Egyptian army. This provided cover long enough, we're told, that God sent a great wind and he parted the sea. And Israel began to walk across the sea on dry land. The seabed dried up. Then it says, as the Egyptians pursue into across the dry riverbed, the wall of waters come down, cover the Egyptians. The Egyptian army is drowned. And the people were told in Exodus chapter 14, believe in Moses and they believe in God. What is it that brings trust in our life? What causes us to believe in God's promises? What causes us to place our dependence in Him? It's as we see Him win the battles in our life. God fought the Egyptians. They were quaking in their floor shimes there on the shore of the Red Sea. They were trapped. The Egyptian army was coming. There was no hope. There was nowhere to go. And they cried out in fear. God fought for them that day. God won the battle. What is it that increases our trust in the Most High? It is seeing Him fight our battles for us. We've seen it over and over through the book of Joshua. Besides that one bad experience at the little tiny place called Ai, that they should have easily captured, numerous Israelis were killed. Every other time, though they go forward, God fights the battle. Stand and see the salvation of your God. My wife and I were talking yesterday, or maybe even this morning, about the passage from Ephesians chapter 6, the spiritual armor passage. It says that recognize that your battle is not against humans. Paul calls it flesh and blood. Recognize that you're not fighting against a human adversary, but rather you are fighting against a spiritual adversary, principalities, powers, forces of darkness. And how does he tell us that we are to prepare for that battle? He simply says, having done everything to stand firm. He tells us to stand. The first thing. He then goes on and talks about ways of defense that God guards us. But the first thing, Rabbi Paul says, is to stand firm. It's as if Paul's remembering the story from the Exodus, where God said, Moses said, stand and you will see the deliverance of God. How do we see our trust in Him grow? It's as we recognize that He is fighting our battles. As we stand and let Him fight our battles. As we said at the beginning, the normal posture for fighting is like this. And nobody disagreed with me, except one. The normal posture for fighting is in this posture where I am ready to spring, I'm ready to duck, I'm ready to attack, I'm ready to defend myself. This is the way we fight. But the Most High says, when it comes to having Him fight our battles, we take a different posture. We take a different posture. Verse 8 of Judges 23 says, hold on to the Lord your God as you have done from the first unto this very day. As the Lord has driven out from before you the great and mighty nations. And as for you, no one has stood against you. one of you have chased 1,000. For the Lord your God has fought for you, just as he said he would. Joshua tells them how to fight their battles in these verses. He says, hold on to, cling to the Lord. Cling to the Lord just as you have done. And the Lord has driven out before you the great and mighty nations. No one has been able to stand against you. As we stand and allow God to fight our battles, no one, Joshua has told Israel, no one has stood against you. One of you have chased 1,000, verse 10. This harkens back to passages in Ezekiel, for instance, in the blessings and the curses, where we're told that if we walk diligently after the Lord and obey him, you will have tremendous blessing in your life. Blessing comes only through obedience. And one of the descriptions used there is that one of you will chase 10 and two of you will chase 1,000. You will have incredible strength. And it's not so much your strength, but it will be because the enemy is so fearful. No one will be able to stand against you. Because, we're told, the Lord your God has fought for you, just as he said. How does it begin? Did you notice verse 8 says, you are to cling, you are to hold on to the Lord your God. Then he will drive out the nations before you. Then he will fight your battles for you. Then no one will be able to stand against you. So the posture that Joshua is encouraging them to take is not this, but holding on to the Most High. That is the posture of battle for those that are pursuing the Most High. This is not the battle posture. The battle posture is holding on, clinging to the Most High. I got married less than a year ago, as you know, and I asked several people, some of my dear and trusted friends, for marriage advice. Most of them were guys, and some of them gave me some really fascinating things to reflect on. Some that I had not known, many of which I've put into practice. One dear friend told me, he said, my advice is to ignore everybody's advice and walk in the wisdom and counsel that the Most High gives you. But one of my friends said something very, very interesting, and I have ruminated on this ever since. He said, he was talking about conflict in marriage, and he was very open and gave some very specific, even recent examples of the conflict that he had with his wife in one situation. And he said, let me tell you a secret for dealing with that. He said, how do you break the ice when there's a breakdown in communication, when there's a breakdown in relationship? How do you break the ice? He said, and I quote, a hug breaks the ice. A hug breaks the ice. And I said, okay, tell me about that. And he said, well, Because when there is conflict, and you feel like you have a point to make, and your partner, your spouse, feels like they have a point to make, you are in a offensive mode. He says you're ready to fight. You're in a fighting posture. But he said a hug is a very different posture than having your fist up, either physically, God, I hope not, but at least emotionally, and having your fist up to your spouse. He said, you cannot hold your fist up emotionally and hug at the same time. And so he said, thus, a hug melts the ice. And as I read this passage from Joshua, that very idea came to mind. What is Joshua telling them? He said, in your relationship with the Most High, as you walk with Him, remember He is fighting your battles. You're not to have your dukes up to fight the battles that are coming at you. You are to stand, and as it says in verse 6, as you are careful to do and to keep all that is written in the book of the instruction of Moses, you will see God fighting your battles. Instead, we cling, we hug, we hold on to God. He is the one that it's described as holding us in His right hand. I think that's Psalm 139. He holds us in His right hand. It also tells us in Exodus chapter 15 that He fights for us with His right hand. Imagine that. He holds us and fights for us at the same time, with the same hand. Because it's the same hand, I suppose it's at the same time. He holds us with His right hand. He fights for us with His right hand. How do we fight our battles? We fight our battles by finding ourselves in Hashem, in the Most High, by holding on to Him. Now, let's continue and see how Joshua contrasts this. Reading on in verse 11, after saying, hold on to God as He drives out the nations, as He fights for you, he then says, verse 11, take good heed for yourselves that you love the Lord. Or else, if you in any wise do not and cleave and hold on to these nations that are among you and make marriages with them and go into them and they into you, know for sure that the Lord your God will not drive out the nations from out of your sight. And they will become a snare, a trap, a scourge, and pricks in your eyes and thorns in your side, till you perish from the good land which the Lord has given you. Joshua is setting up a contrast. He's saying, we have in this life a choice. In our experience living in the blessings that God has brought to us in our inheritance, as we're receiving our inheritance and walking this life, as God is fighting our battles for us and we're seeing success, we have a choice of allegiance and loyalty. We can cling to Him, we can hug Him, or we can hug something else. Did you note that in verse 13, or is it 12? He says, Or else if you cling to the nations, then God will no longer drive out these nations from before you. The implication is God will no longer fight your battles. If you hold on to God, He fights for you. If you let go of God and hold on somewhere else, God ceases to be Ish Milchama, the man of war that He has promised to be. So the choice comes down to, who should we hold on to? Who are you holding on to? You can fight by yourself, or you can hug and relate in relationship to the Most High. He will fight your battles, and you can otherwise choose to go embrace and hold on to, pursue something else, other allegiances, other relationships, but you will find that God is not fighting your battles anymore. What increases our trust in God? It's as we see Him fight our battles. He wins our allegiance. After all, Rabbi Paul pointed out in his writings that Jews demand a sign. The faithfulness, the covenant faithfulness and action of God is something that Rabbi Paul recognized that Jewish people expect. But that comes with a fervency, a loyalty, a clinging to the Most High. How do we fight? Is it with our dukes up? Or is it an embrace? Joshua encourages us, just like my friend did last autumn. You fight your battles in an embrace. Holding melts the ice. Holding God allows Him to fight our battles for us. Holding on to God allows us to feel secure in His power. After all, He is the Mighty One. He is the great, mighty, and awesome God. Who are we going to hold on to?